You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
This is All Things Therapy, where we are changing consciousness one conversation at a time. And I'm Lisa Tahir, your host.
Hello there. Welcome to All Things Therapy Podcast. I am Lisa Tahir, your host. I'm so excited about today's guest because she's a really prolific creative and creator, and I love being connected to other creative individuals. I believe that we are all creative. You may or may not be tapped into that part of yourself. So an intention I have is that today, Tasha Golden, PhD, is going to help us really connect to our propensity to create and how that intersects with well-being, creativity and well-being. There's so much at that intersection. Briefly about me, I'm a licensed therapist. If you're looking to work with someone, I do virtual sessions with people everywhere. You can learn more at my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It stands for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy, the two places I live and really love being in. I'm in New Orleans today, and NOLA Therapy is also my Instagram and YouTube, where you can find episodes of the podcast and past guests, including Dr. Golden, who I'll be sharing this week live up on all the places you can find this podcast. So let me tell you more about Tasha. Dr. Golden was formerly the singer-songwriter for the band Ellery, but personally came to a crossroads, experiencing depression and answering questions she hadn't considered before to transform herself, her own life. And now Tasha helps others worldwide as a mentor, consultant, keynote speaker, a researcher, poet, and writer. Dr. Golden is the director of research at the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins University, and she really loves studying the profound influence that the arts have on human well-being. Dr. Golden, I'm going to bring you in the stream. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I'm glad to be here.
I am so happy to meet you. How are you today?
Oh, you know, it is bananas week in my world. Things are back to back, but it's lovely to have a little spot to talk about things that are human and talk about well-being with you. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for taking your time out. And you have so much to offer. What is on your heart and mind today as far as beginning with this intersection of creativity and well-being that's such your wheelhouse?
Well, when I think about your show and your listeners and people who are pursuing well-being or pursuing growth for themselves, a big part of what I look at when it comes to the role of creativity is not just, you know, how does creativity in the arts help maybe like our symptoms? A lot of times when people hear that I research impacts of arts on health, they think immediately of things like music therapy or art therapy. What are some things that we can do that are therapeutic or licensed therapists that help us feel better in the moment? And a lot of what I'm interested in is both that, but also this larger question of how can we be more creative about what we think it means to be human, how we think we can connect with one another, what it is that we think that we do in the world, even how we define health and well-being are such crucial questions. So those are always where I love to start, especially with creative thinkers and with people who are, like I said, looking to grow, looking for their own well-being. How can we allow ourselves to be a little bit more creative about what we even think that means and what we think that might look like?
I really like that. And what's coming to mind, Dr. Golden, is how does that apply? How do you use that? Like you said, this week for you has been busy. For me as well, to really cope with and keep our vibration up, meaning feeling happiness and joy and connection to the day-to-day. How are some ways that you have done that and do that?
Well, I might say that an approach to that, what that art can be informative for, or creativity can be informative for, is that a lot of times, if you think about the art that you really care about, sometimes it is art that makes you feel up, that gives you joy, that's beautiful. But sometimes the art that a lot of us really care about is the art that seems to hold space for our grief, for example, or that it holds space for us to be sad, or that reminds us that, you know, the human condition is really complex and difficult, and that, you know, it's not always going to feel great. And what is it that we need in those moments when inevitably the human condition and the human experience brings us something that's difficult? How is it that we can interact with that? And one of the things that comes to mind for me in your question there is, and I remember for myself that the point of life isn't to be happy all the time, which is to say that when I'm unhappy, that doesn't mean that something has that doesn't always mean that something has gone wrong.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I've done something wrong. It means that it often can mean that, but it can also often mean that I'm just human. And so what is it that I need as a human being in order to be well? And sometimes that creative work is about finding space to be who we are, to be human, to connect with others, even when it doesn't feel great, even when it's not beautiful, but it's fully human, right?
I really like that. And I'm thinking as well, even connecting with ourselves in those moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And allowing space for that in our day.
Yeah. You mentioned that I am a director of research for the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins. And, you know, my PhD is in public health, but this is definitely not where I planned to be in my life. Right. And you mentioned that there was a kind of big transition for me. And, you know, as a singer-songwriter, I had songs about difficult experiences, including my own experience with major depression, my family's history of domestic violence. And what I found over the years of touring was that anywhere we went in the world, those were the songs that people lined up after shows wanting to talk about.
Wow.
And people would share really personal stories with me after concerts, stories about mental illness, about suicide ideation, about their own histories of abuse. And they would often follow that up by saying, I was the first person they had ever told.
Wow.
If you think about that, that means, you know, they had never told a doctor or a therapist. It means they'd never even told a spouse or a partner.
Right.
So over the years, as consistent as that was, I, you know, had to wonder, what is it about music or music venue or about a singer or a song that makes these critical, these important, profound stories speakable for the first time? Right. Yeah. And I was also wondering, you know, like, what is it that we don't know about each other, about ourselves, about so many populations and experiences, because we cannot or will not share about some experiences in these straightforward ways that society often demands of us or expects of us. And, you know, I saw the same thing when I founded Project Uncaged. It's a trauma-informed.
Yes. I wanted to talk to you
program.
About that. Yes.
Yeah. It's a, like I said, a trauma-informed creative writing program for girls that are incarcerated. And as you might imagine, they share really different information in their poems and songs than they ever share in questionnaires or surveys that they might get, or even in conversations sitting around a table. So again, when I would work with them, I had this question of, what is it that we don't know about young people, including young people in the justice system? Because we tend to ask questions of ourselves and each other in incredibly limited ways. And I ultimately kind of followed those questions to a PhD, but those questions also passed through my own, you know, bout of burnout and major depression that made me have to rethink, okay, if I can't be a musician, if I can't play concerts, what is it that I want to do? And what I wanted to do was answer those questions about what is it that music and the arts is doing for us as far as expanding our ability to be who we are and share that with one another.
Your Project Uncaged really touched me because I worked at a maximum security prison during Hurricane Katrina at Angola Prison in Louisiana. It was a prison created after the Civil War, and it traditionally had been only men, 3,500 men. The typical sentence was 20 years to life. It was a last stop prison. And when Hurricane Katrina happened, people that were in local jails in New Orleans and surrounding parishes, since everything flooded, they were all taken to Angola. And the population went from 3,500 to 7,000. 7,000 people, including women, and they didn't even have tampons and things for women. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for some work being displaced and evacuated. And my professor at Tulane University was the head of mental health at Angola. So I got to start working on the spot, Dr. Golden. And I spent a year there, and it was really intense because once we got all the people out that had been displaced, I did anger management groups. It was about 100 inmates a day, and these men in there for crimes like murder, for rape, and bank robberies, you know, violent crimes. And I was given this curriculum called Cage Your Rage, and it was a video program and then a handout, these questions that, and most of the therapists set up the classroom like in classroom style desks, and they're the teacher in the front. And the, I mean, the inmates, they were shooting spitballs. Nobody was paying attention. And I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, how, like, I want to do some real work and make an impact. So I had these other social workers had guards in the room. I told the guard, I do not want you in my room. I put the chairs in a circle.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
And we had to watch the video, and the questions I extrapolated. And I said, look, I'm here for a year. I really want to get to what landed you in Angola. Like, what did you experience in your childhood that still might be unresolved, causing you issues? Like, I know most of you here are here for the rest of your lives. Like, I'd really like to get to some of that, you know, real stuff that's meaningful. And they were shocked, Dr. Golden. They're like, nobody's ever talked to us like this. And it took the full year for them to finally start talking about their trauma and the things they experienced that caused them to commit these crimes. And it was so meaningful to have that time in this setting that was just so extreme and out of the norm of our lives. So it touched me that you have this trauma-informed, arts-based program to work with girls in juvenile detentions and I think really shift the outcome and trajectory of their lives as a result. Oh,
thank you so much for sharing that story of your background. And, you know, it makes me think, you know, what you said about that they said nobody's, you know, talked to us like this, nobody's asked us this. I run into that so often, you know, with girls in the justice system, but also you would be surprised, audiences of all kinds, like people, like very wealthy people, people who are doing, you know, what it seems like from the outside really well,
yeah,
will say the same kinds of things. But, you know, it's fascinating to, for example, you know, we take journals in for the girls to write in, and there's a lot of like writing prompts for them, but you might give a prompt like, you know, what landscape are you? Describe the landscape of your life. Or, you know, even like, what do you wish were different about the world? And I can't tell you how many times, you know, one of the girls has said something like, I've been waiting for someone to ask me this.
Wow.
I've been waiting for someone to ask me this. And I think what's really powerful sometimes about the space of an arts-based setting is that it is often a space of inquiry, especially when it's a space where you're creating art versus, you know, witnessing it, which is also really powerful. But when you're invited to create art, there's a lot of inquiry there and curiosity, and people find a space to finally be asked a question that they didn't maybe even realize that they wanted to answer, or ask themselves a question and pursue a line of inquiry that becomes meaningful to them and helps them to know themselves in a new way. And I'll also say, you know, I think that the arts open up, and I think this is so important for your listeners to consider as well, the arts open up a way to think about health, not just at the immediate, like personal individual level, but how it is that we change the world. I do trainings in mental health and trauma-informed practice for people in creative professions, arts organizations, artists. And a big part of what we talk about, especially because my training is in public health versus, you know,
yes,
versus being a physician or something like that, or a therapist. And so I'm often thinking about, how do we not only change how you feel right now, but what led to this, and how do we become part of changing that? And I think that what we forget about sometimes is that, you know, what I say in my trainings very often is that changing the world is part of how humans heal. if you think about people who've been through really difficult circumstances, and we know from research on post-traumatic growth, for example, that a big part of how human beings heal is, for example, trying to become part of a solution to what happened to them. How can I help make sure this doesn't happen to somebody else? Or how can I learn from this and create a world where this doesn't have to be as common as it was when I experienced it, or something like that. You know, you can think about different examples for people's stories. And I think that when we think about healing, sometimes we, and this is a societal thing, we're so used to thinking about it at an individual level and also at a reactive level. How do we react when something goes wrong? And I think it can be so creative and so stimulating and imaginative to open that back up and think like, what if health is about not reacting, not just about reacting when something goes wrong, but building a world in which it becomes more and more possible for humans to thrive? And how can we be part of that? Because it's not just having that kind of world that would feel good, but helping to create it is such a big part of how we heal and become whole and connect with one another.
It is, absolutely. And what I'm curious about, Dr. Golden, as I hear you say in several different ways, a theme in your work centered around what are we not asking, and in your own life. I was surprised when I read how you were in the band Ellery, singer, songwriter, successful. I'm imagining like living what people would look like this is a dream, and then experiencing depression. And like, can you share with us kind of what happened for you and how you emerged from that to be in this version of yourself?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that I will say I share this in common with many people. I was depressed for a long time before I realized I was depressed, right? I didn't have the right language. I thought that depression was something else, or, you know, I had it kind of like stereotyped or characterized in my mind in a certain way that kept me from recognizing that what I was experiencing was depression, which kept me from recognizing that maybe there were tools or opportunities for me. But anyway, yeah, we were touring a lot. The music industry is known for being a grind and hustle. It can be really difficult. And then also I will say, you know, the stories that people shared with me being a kind of, a sounding board for that and a space holder for that is one of the great honors of my life. And then also, I did not have support or preparation to know how to hold those stories while also taking care of myself. Mm. And so there was a way in which I was kind of just adding those stories one after another into something that I was trying to carry in some way that wasn't, you know, that wasn't healthy. Right. And the combination of those things over time, yeah, wore me down till, you know, we recorded our, you know, our most ambitious project. And I, you know, we tried to start touring to kind of promote it. And I promptly wound up, you know, unable to get out of bed, let alone play concerts. And I was like that for, you know, weeks, and had to spend that time reimagining, okay, I don't think that I can keep touring. I don't think I can keep doing this thing that, let me say, I wanted to do since I was a little girl. This was the dream. Like, I wanted to tour and play songs. I wanted to have songs and TV and film. I did these kinds of things. It was wonderful. It was everything that I had worked really hard for. And I felt like depression and burnout had really stolen those from me. I didn't know who I was or what I was going to be. But like I said, those questions of, what was it that was happening in these music venues for people? And for me, why was I able to tell a room full of hundreds of people something that I literally had never talked about out loud with like my closest family or friends, right? Yeah. What was it about music that, or song, or about the creative writing metaphor that let these things come to the fore? So I began doing some research around, you know, talk about ability basically, and how the arts helps with us with that, and how that links to health and well-being, and wound up pursuing that through public health, and then working with the International Arts and Mind Lab now.
It sounds like you really listen to your intuition.
Yeah, in some ways, it's all that I had, Lisa. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, in the midst of depression, a big sign of it is that just nothing interests you. It's not so much that you feel sad sometimes, it's that you feel nothing.
Right.
And I did feel quite sad much of the time, but I also felt so little. And I think that the tiny thread of a curiosity that was just like, that gave me a little bit of hope, and I'm a little emotional talking about it, but that tiny thread was just, but something was going on in those spaces. And maybe I didn't have the capacity or the resources to handle it completely healthfully when it was happening. But what a beautiful, interesting thing. And what if we could circle back and understand what was happening in a different way and then open that up for other people? And what I love about my work now is that there's so much cool work happening around how you can bridge the gap between what becomes really possible for human beings in the space of like art and creativity and beauty and aesthetics and what's not really yet possible for us in other spaces, our workplaces, our schools, our clinics. And there's a lot of really beautiful emergent work happening where people are trying to very practically, concretely reintegrate, because it's not an integration, right? Like we separated these things at some point in human history, right? Arbitrarily. We're reintegrating the arts with these other aspects of our lives. And so that sense that I had in the midst of my depression, that there was some kind of thread of a hope here was true. You know, that there is something to follow and a way to find a spark of something that could make me feel like my life had direction again.
Yes. I really appreciate your vulnerability and transparency. Thank you.
I think a funny gift of being a songwriter for a lot of years is that you find early on that when you say the things that feel hardest to say, that's when you make the connection. When you write the song that feels hardest to write, that's the song, like I said, that people wind up wanting to talk about. And I think how that comes out now in my research and when I'm talking with fabulous people like you is that, here's the honest, transparent truth.
Yeah.
You know, let's just look at it head on, because that's where we find our connection with one another.
I think it touches something in everyone, these universal themes that your music address, that your work addresses, to really model and give permission to others to talk about the things that are actually most important and sometimes really vulnerable and feeling very raw to share, but it truly connects us and I think creates a lot of happiness.
In the sense of the difference between thinking of well-being as something that feels really great versus something that makes you feel kind of like whole and that you have meaning even when you don't feel really great, these kind of moments of transparency and connection that like maybe we're connecting on about something that's difficult, but the connection itself feels like it's good, right?
Yeah.
And there's such a beautiful complexity to that. I'm often reminding people that the WHO, the World Health Organization, in the 40s, they defined health as a state of complete mental, physical, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. So complete, that's a really high bar, by the way,
that is.
Complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And so a lot of times when I give talks around the world, I will ask people, what is it? What is well-being then? Like assuming it's more than just the absence of suffering.
Yes.
What is it? And people, go ahead.
Yeah. What is it? The presence of. I'm here.
Right. Yeah. Like what's here. A lot of times I'll say like health is not just about what's absent, what's here. Mm-hmm. And even if you open up your phone and you look up emojis for health, it'll be things like a stethoscope or a doctor. And it's always like this kind of medicalized idea of like, what are we trying to treat or fix or prevent or something like that. But health is really also about what's here. And when people answer this question of what well-being is, and I invite any of your listeners, like, just wherever you are, a little thought experiment, what do you think well-being is? A lot of times the definitions that people give of it is a sense of something in the midst of suffering, like feeling like your life has meaning or feeling like you're contributing to a greater good or having a sense of having support from other people when you need it. But oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes the definitions, more often than not, kind of acknowledge suffering implicitly. But it's possible to feel well and be well, even when you're sick, even when something's going wrong. And I think that's such a curious and beautiful thing for humans to explore. And, art gives us ways to do that, like I said, because art can be beautiful and happy, but it can also be difficult and challenging and help us grieve, help us do the work that we need to do to kind of challenge ourselves to grow, these kinds of things. So art kind of helps us to be a little bit more human rather than thinking in black and white terms.
Yes. Dr. Golden, I want to share Magic Mind with our listeners. And when we come back, I want you to share more about imagination, because I love our imagination and using it. I'd love to hear you share about how you see the use of our imagination in our lives.
Sure.
Okay, awesome. Whoop. Hi, y'all. You know that I really love Magic Mind. It is a nootropic. And what that means is that there are ingredients in Magic Mind that are really good for our brains. Things like ashwagandha, cordyceps mushrooms, lion's mane mushrooms, turmeric, vitamin C, and there is ceremonial grade matcha in Magic Mind. It's a little 2-ounce shot that really helps me personally to feel more calm after I drink it. And it's usually at the start of a day when I drink Magic Mind. And I literally notice just this wave of peacefulness, and my thoughts seem to order more sequentially than normally without it. And I'd love for you to try Magic Mind. You can either take 20% off a single order to try them out, or 56% off a monthly subscription. Simply learn more and go to magicmind.co/Lisa, my first name, and use code Lisa to get those discounts, and you can learn more about them. Thank you, Magic Mind, for supporting All Things Therapy podcast. And let's get back to Dr. Golden. Will you share with us about the imagination and its power?
I'm so glad you asked about this, because like I said, sometimes when we talk about arts and health, it sort of like gets pretty focused on narrowly, like what are some practical arts-based things that I can do to feel better? And yeah. Listen, like if you all want some of that, I'm happy to give you any of those kinds of practical things. But like I said, at this larger level, if you zoom out to like, what is the human condition and how can we improve our systems and structures in our communities? There's so much of that work has to do with imagination. And I often quote James Baldwin. He said, "The world is before you, and you need not take it or leave it as it was when you came in." And the work of not taking or leaving it as it was when we came in is all about imagination. Mm. And I've always said that our most crucial creative practice, whether you're an artist, you identify as an artist or not, whether you're just a human being who's seeking to do good in the world, right? Our most crucial creative practice is to be able to imagine otherwise. Sometimes a little capital I, capital O there, like to imagine otherwise, that our ability to be able to grow as human beings comes from our ability to imagine that we could be different in the future, right? And then if you expand that out, that our ability to make change in the world relies on our ability to not accept that it just is what it is, or that it's just gonna be what it's going to be. And that is such crucial work, as you know, I've always thought of like the work of artists, and James Baldwin has said this before too, that, you know, like artists can't take anything for granted. We drive to the heart of every answer, he said, and we expose the questions that the answers hide. And, you know, he was talking about artists in that moment. I so appreciate that as an artist, but I think that that's our work as human beings, right? To not accept the premise of what is, and to be able to imagine, well, what should a community look like? I often, when I'm working with my students, we will talk about that absence and presence, those two halves of health. It's not just what's absent, but it's what's present.
What's present, yes.
And we talk about, you know, like, what does it take for a human being to thrive? That's really the question. It's not how do we get better and better at preventing, reducing, fixing, treating things that we don't want, but how can we reorient our lens and bring an imagination to what is it that humans need to thrive? And to be honest, I talk about this with my students a lot, that we're better at this with pets than we are with humans. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to a shelter and you're trying to adopt a dog and you live in it's a huge dog and you live in a tiny studio apartment and you have no park nearby and you hate going on walks, you know, if you take that dog home in a few weeks, that dog's probably going to be miserable. Yeah. And it won't be because it needs medicine. It won't be because it has some kind of mysterious ailment. It will be because it's in an environment that's not conducive to its ability to thrive. Mm-hmm. And similarly with humans, we could think about, and it's, you know, it's diverse because humans are so magnificently diverse, but what is it that humans need to thrive, and how can we put our imaginations toward creating that rather than accepting the world as it was when we came in?
Absolutely. And I love exploring the imagination, because our minds are so powerful to create the outcomes, the lives that we really want to. In my meditation every morning, I meditate and visualize, and I encourage my clients as well to use your mind to even push against fear-based thoughts, negative thoughts, depressing thoughts, and imagine how would I like to feel instead? What would I like to experience instead? And really try to create that within yourself using your imagination, and then take inspired action.
Yes. And there are practices that you can put in place, you know, creative practices. Being an artist can sometimes be good for this, because like you kind of train your brain to think differently. Even that prompt that I mentioned earlier, to think like, what landscape are you, to think in this metaphorical term, and then maybe to have to get really detailed about it. Like, well, why are you a road in the middle of nowhere? What is there a tree nearby? What's the weather like? Just making your brain go into that kind of weird direction that we don't usually do in the midst of our like everyday lives is kind of training it to be open to something that's askew, that's, you know, out in left field a little bit. And sometimes that's what we need in order to re-see or like recognize, you know, recognize our lives. Yeah.
Dr. Golden, what do you want to leave us with? Like closing, parting thoughts, food for thought?
Thank you. Well, it's such a delight to talk with you. And I think maybe if I could leave a parting thought, it would be that, you know, creativity is definitely a part of how humans have evolved to witness and process our lives, to navigate our lives. If, you know, if art and creativity weren't useful to our survival, we would have stopped doing this millennia ago, right? So we ignore the arts at our peril, you know, definitely to our detriment, and sometimes at our peril. And that's just to say, that's not to say, and if you're not making art, then you better go hurry up and do it. Like, it's more like, what if you can invite that in? What if you cannot try to force yourself to be somebody who doesn't need that, who doesn't, you know, who doesn't need to take breaks for music or to dance or to go explore nature, these other things? What if you could embrace that as part of what it means to be human and tap into it as part of how you connect with other people or how you do better work in the workplace that you care about, or how you find out how you want to contribute to the world in whatever ways are meaningful to you? This is part of how we human, as I like to say. The arts are part of how we human. And the human experience is really vast. We don't have to try to navigate it without some creativity and art to help us along. We evolved to do this, and we can take that up as a tool.
As you're speaking, I'm just thinking of just the art of living.
Yeah. The art of living, the art of being human.
Yeah.
it's a creative process, absolutely. And sometimes when we want it to be, oh, you know, as a neurodivergent person, I really love things to be the same all the time and, you know, expectable and have my rituals and routines. But that's just not the way that the human experience is, right? It's an art. It flows. It's something that's evolving and that we're creating every day that we live it, you know?
Yes.
And that's a beautiful thing to embrace. It can keep us from closing ourselves down.
You know, I really appreciate you, Dr. Golden. Thank you for the time you've taken today with us.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. It's great to meet you.
So wonderful to meet you. Thank you so very much. Bye.
Bye.
That concludes today's talk with Dr. Tasha Golden. Find her at Tasha, T-A-S-H-A, golden.com, as well as on Instagram at tasha.golden. All of my love to you, and I just wish you the most wonderful rest of your week.
And that's a wrap. Thank you. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review All Things Therapy on the platform you're listening from. And let's connect on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at NOLA Therapy, the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy, reflecting my two favorite cities. And let's keep changing consciousness, one conversation at a time.